Hello, everyone, and welcome, welcome again to What You Think, the drive home after the show, where we're talking everything about the movie that we just saw, and the movie we just saw was... Oh, someone help me with the title here.
X-Men, Days of Future Past.
X-Men, Things of Future Past.
I should see this one. I thought we were doing Forrest Gump, too.
And I am here with three of my favorite fanboys in the whole world. My wonderful spouse, Cole Houston. My wonderful adopted younger brother, Andrew Farmer. And my partner in crime, Bobby Blakey.
Hello.
Hey. And we are talking about X-Men Days of Future Past. As always, it is full of spoilers, lots and lots of spoilers.
And then some.
And then some. So you know the job was dangerous when you took it. And we are going to hit the ground running because there's so much to talk about. We are going to start off, as always, with when...
Oh, and actually we should also point out that this is yet another of the ongoing... of this summer's ongoing crossovers between What'd You Think and Hey Kids Comics.
And Hey Kids Comics. So I will bow to the master creator of Hey Kids Comics, Andrew Farmer, to get us started on how he felt about the movie.
Okay. I love that deep sigh of just sadness.
Just, ugh.
Like, that could have been an
edit point,
but that's
just
too good.
Yeah, it stays in. That stays in the picture. So, are we talking about the trailer, or are we talking about
the
movie overall?
Okay, what we're going to start out with was how the movie compared to the trailers and what you were expecting to see.
See, that's tough. That's tough because for me and many other comic book fans that are out there, this is kind of Watchmen level material.
Uh-huh.
I know that's going to offend the sensibilities of certain members of the panel, but this is sort of a revered story arc. In the comic book world, and that's the Days of Future Past story arc. A lot of people say it's the best multiverse story that comic books has ever told. It's definitely in the top, in everybody's top five X-Men stories story arcs that have ever been done. I went in trying not to have any expectations, but it's hard to not go in with expectations when you title something Days of Future Past
after
the comic book's been out for a long time.
You were praying really hard that it didn't suck.
Well, I was either praying really hard that it didn't suck, and I stayed away from as many trailers as I could. I was either praying really hard that it didn't suck, or praying that it was so different that it didn't matter whether it would suck or not.
Okay.
You know, that they went so far afield of the actual material that even if it did suck, it wasn't going to suck because they made the story from the comic book suck. You know what I mean?
Like
they did something really weird, like Mimics in it, and Dazzler shows up. Like just
they made something even better than. In its own
or way. Worse, yeah, but or worse. But has nothing to do with what it was. So
it's funny you say Dazzler shows up, as I was waiting for it in that. I'm sure we'll talk about it in that nightclub sequence.
Oh,
I thought they were going to throw her up on stage performing. You know, when
that's
they were going to that like disco or whatever. I'm like, oh, please make Dazzler show up. That would be so awesome. I'm sorry. Go ahead,
Jubilee,
sir.
League, you know, in an arcade. Oh wait, that was Generation X.
Oh. We don't need
that.
No.
I'll explain why that was invoked later, but please go on.
But yes, I tried to go in with no expectations. I had plenty of expectations, but I tried to bury them until I could draw my own conclusions.
Had you read all the comics in
that
series? Okay.
Yeah, it was two issues of X-Men back
okay.
in the
Yeah, it wasn't a lot, but it was iconic. It made an impact.
Is it one of those that you just read and reread that you're as a fan card holder, if you're an X-Men fan, you're expected to be able to quote the thing.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we certainly know exactly what happened.
Yeah.
If you say you're an X-Men fan, and I'm trying to test you on your fandom, I'm going to ask if you know Days of Future Past and Phoenix Saga and who Corsair is. And it's just that got a laugh out of Bobby.
Do you know who Chod is?
Oh, man. Chode the Toad. but you know what I mean? Like that's one of those things where I expect, as a Star Wars fan, you to be able to say, never tell me the odds and mean it. As an X-Men fan, I expect you to be able to say, yeah, I know that cover of that particular issue where they're standing in front of that wall with all the wanted posters. And I'm a little upset that they didn't do that, but hey, you know, whatever. Okay,
yeah, I mean,
that's my two cents on that.
But at the same time, I felt like, you know, if you saw it, it would be like, hey, that's great, but it's way out of place.
Well, John Byrne, how did they do that?
John Byrne's so grumpy about everything, they probably didn't want to put him anywhere near it.
Yeah, he's sort of like the low-rent Alan Moore at this point.
And he doesn't seem to be happy about anything that's ever happened.
Alan Moore had his smile surgically removed.
It's just hidden. It's just hidden so far under the beard that it's impossible to see anymore.
You know, in all fairness, he is Canadian.
Well, he's got that Radagast the Brown thing going on.
Oh, that's true.
There's all sorts of stuff living in there.
He's also upset by being made the Big Belly Burger mascot.
Oh.
Because he's forgotten that he's the one who did that.
No. Okay, who what else saw some trailers and has something to compare it to? Cole, how do you think it compared to the trailers?
I was really, I think though, when it came to the trailers I saw, I think they did largely a good job of kind of teasing the idea of, oh look, you get a double cast. So it's like, you know, you get both generations, leaving you wondering how that works because so many things about First Class undermine things that, it's like, did you guys even watch the other movies, or
yeah.
Is this a reboot, or do you even know which direction you want to go? The biggest complaint, though, I have, there was an American Pie flute moment in the trailer.
Ah.
In that, one of the earliest trailers I saw, it may not be the first one, so you know, people who know which one came first, don't go jumping in on me here. But you know, one of the earliest trailers I saw, it was one of the super sentinels there, you know, leaping about behind Storm with a, you know, a T-1000 arm about to bear down on her.
Okay.
And then it, you know, stops short and goes on to other things. Well, that's all well and good, but that was to me because of what followed when you saw the actual finished film. It was the same as once at band camp, I stuck my flute up, and then... Well, you know, if you can't guess what's going to happen next in either of those scenarios, then good for you because both were a satisfying surprise. But in the, you know, in the one case, the American Pie trailers undermined a great joke by, you know, giving you all but the punchline, which you could, you know, you could easily guess. This gave away what could have been a moderately poignant Storm death. Because the only thing you don't get is the moment of impact and her, you know, her dead corpse being nonchalantly tossed aside.
Well, does she die in the comics?
Yes, in fact...
They all die in the comics.
Yeah, everybody dies in the comics.
Yeah, you know, the one thing this lacked, because it was Wolverine going back in time and not Kitty, because, you know, frankly, Wolverine is sexier and more marketable on screen.
Yeah, that was my big problem with it.
Yeah.
That was, go on, but yeah.
But in a sense, though, they made that make more sense. Because you were able to play upon a few things about his character. But, that notwithstanding, you know, in the comics, in fact, all the Sentinel, they didn't have, like, the super adaptoid Sentinels. But the Sentinels are designed and programmed, as it were, to you know, be prepared for all kinds of mutants. And she's flying around, you know, creating winds and storms and electricity and stuff. And apparently, in her old age, her danger room training slips her mind, and she gets a palm spear through the gut.
Right.
Because apparently the Sentinels shoot spears out of their palms.
And Sentinels do whatever they need the Sentinels to do when Sentinels.
But, you know, in the comic,
this
definitely did not happen in the movie because people were just, like, freaked out in a huge way. Wolverine is actually reduced to his skeleton.
Mm-hmm. He's burnt down to a nubbin.
He is so flash-fried, there's nothing left. But anything that isn't adamantium is vaporized. To go back to the last episode, it's like somebody got the oxygen destroyer after him.
Oh my God!
Oh Lord!
And that's for Catherine and Bobby. Yeah. For anyone who listened to the last episode.
And if you didn't listen to the last episode, you're probably not listening to this one, so it doesn't really matter anyway.
Well, Bobby, did you read the comics at all?
I'm going to be one of those people that, like, I am an X-Men fan, and yes, I've had read the comics, but I've read them once, and I never really cared. I'm not gonna lie. There's never been a single X-Men story that's ever stuck with me enough for me to care. Like, I know which ones are the important ones. You know, I know the Days of Future Past. I know the Phoenix Saga. And, you know, I know that I've read them and I know their existence and I know the basis behind them.
Do you know who Sikorsky was?
Yeah, he was like this Jewish guy that. No, I don't know who that is.
not even the Dracula story arc. Come on, that was the best one. The Dracula fights the X-Men.
No, like I've read, like, see, my
God,
passion for X-Men didn't kick into way later, and really by that point, I'd never really got fully sucked into the full world of it, you know, as being my go-to book. I read them because I liked individual characters, but I never cared much about the team as a whole. That being said,
you probably like Strife.
I didn't like Strife. I thought he looked cool, but I was never like. I mean, I was an X-Force fan.
I think you should draw Strife as your next card, as your next.
Well, I will. I'm drawing Warpath right now, but but not like as now knowing they were doing the story. Like the first thing I thought of was they're just going to use this story so they can blend the two movies and make more money and blah blah blah. And you know, and that's really what they were doing. But I'm probably one of the few like comic fan people that can let it go, you know, as far as I separate, I never expect the story we got in the comics in any of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I separate it that this is the cinematic version of the story because obviously Days of Future Past storyline is not going to be the comic one because you've already changed everything in the movies of who's what.
Yeah.
You know, so if you were to suddenly say Kitty Pryde is the lead in this film, who's going to give a crap? Because she's never been a lead in any of them. When she was, it was the one everyone hated. So, you know, so I just kind of, I was more looking forward to see how they could, because anytime you put time travel in any movie, you have a risk of it becoming like Black Knight with Martin Lawrence or something like that and becoming really bad, you know?
Do any of you guys think of this deliberately being a passing the torch because some of the older characters are getting too old for this shit and they it's time to pass this on to somebody else?
Yeah, because I mean, you have to imagine that Ian McKellen isn't going to be with us too much longer. We'd like for him to be, but
I think he's got like that gay staying power. He'll be here forever.
I didn't realize that was a thing.
That's a mutability, apparently.
Yeah,
quote unquote gays.
It is. But, him and Patrick Stewart spend so much time together. I don't think either one of them are going to ever die.
I hope that I would like to see them live well into their late 90s. It would be
already,
wonderful, I mean, and be on
like
Broadway.
Next year.
Yeah.
That would be.
We call that the Christopher Lee postulate.
Yes, exactly.
Just forever.
I was actually more interested in this way in a lot of these movies. I'm just more interested in who they're going to bring in. Are they going to make them do them some semblance of right or even cooler? You know, so I actually was more excited when I found out they were going to have you know, Bishop and Warpath and people like that, and Colossus was going to get a little more screen time, you know, to, or not screen time, but to do something.
Yeah.
Well,
as
I
opposed
love
to carry a child around.
My God. Quicksilver was just hysterical.
Well, and he was one of the ones, of course, everybody was freaking out because he looks like shit, but it worked for me. I thought he stole the freaking movie.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, going back to your earlier question about the passing of the torch, I think that definitely is a way to basically join the two franchises.
Mm-hmm.
If not necessarily pass the torch, certainly, you know, give a connection, because that's the big head scratcher when you saw First Class. Because so much of what had happened in the other franchise, it was sort of like going into Episode One of Star Wars. Like, did you guys even listen to any of the dialogue in the other movie?
Yeah.
Well, and they were clearly going into not only the pass the torch aspect, but because of the direction they went with the end of the film, they were wiping out Last Stand, and they were wiping out Wolverine Origins,
which
or
is
X-Men
exactly.
Origins.
Fine with me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of basically what it comes down to is, you know, Days of Future Past was the ideal choice of storyline, because when you start mucking around with time, and you muck around with time before the time that all these other movies that, you know, we love and hate at the same time, then you can just pretty much unwrite anything you want, and it works now.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what happened, because these events never happened, then a lot of other things likely could never have happened, like the ridiculous collection of mutants in cages that then, instead of using their powers to fight the people who enslave them, they just simply run away.
Yeah.
In Wolverine,
and I'm not bitter
about that at
all.
Catherine hates that, but
yeah.
You know, now you can effectively say, well, that's been undone.
Yay!
I hope they bring it back to piss Catherine off.
Well, that's the thing, right? That this whole movie was a reset button
for
the X-Men franchise, which was so, in my mind, so cool.
Yeah.
Like, nothing has been right. I would say that Wolverine, not Origins, but what was the second Wolverine movie?
It
was called The Wolverine. I know that's hard to remember.
Shut up, Bobby.
It's God throws people.
That was decent. I support that movie. X-Men 1 and 2, I support. But I really like the fact that they kind of, you know, shit in a sock and smeared on somebody's face with, you know, in their stance against Last Stand there. That was excellent.
Yeah, that was much needed.
Well, I don't have the big issue. Like, there's aspects of that movie, but I don't have the big issue with Last Stand that everybody else has.
It just sucked. I don't have an issue with it. It's just a bad movie.
I actually don't hate it that much. There's parts of it I think like Angel was
Last Stand.
You're not.
Yeah, I don't have that big of an issue with that movie, but that's just me.
I mean, apart from, I think one person had described it very well. Someone who was, you know, sort of schooled in cinema, and said that it had no third act. It didn't even really have a second act. It just sort of had a. It was just a pile of scenes.
Yeah.
It had an A line, a B line, and a C line.
Yeah.
But like you said, all of them were one act. It was like one act plays.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a bunch of different stuff
all strung together with some tenuous connecting plot line.
Right. I don't care about what happened X-Men-wise in it, besides the fact that they screwed up some of the stuff that I really like. I more care about the fact that it just wasn't a good movie.
Well, as far as Days of Future Past, when I saw the trailers, they didn't really mean that much to me because I never read the comics at all. I've really enjoyed the Marvel franchise with the few that we've already mentioned, the few of them that just really dropped the ball. But overall, I've really liked them. And so I just went into this knowing absolutely nothing about what was supposed to happen at all, other than it's supposed to be some sort of, we really screwed up, so we're gonna go back in time and try to unscrew it up. And I really, really enjoyed the movie and the characters as they were. The only problem that I have, and this is always with time travel movies, is somebody comes up to you and they say that they're from the future, and it always seems such a plausible, you know, sure.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, when you're Professor X,
right,
and your best bud was Magneto, and you met this kid who was like, had the monkey feet.
Yeah, it's like, this, people, this is the kind of movie that that's kind of plausible.
Yeah, he had people hands and monkey feet, and then he
damn it.
They had an injection that turned him blue. And,
but
you know,
I know a lot of strange people, and still I'm not going to buy time travel.
You have this Azure childhood friend who can look like anybody, and you know, at that point, you know, your ability to take things as read is pretty much ingrained.
Right.
It's like muscle memory, because you just, you're ready for anything at that point. Besides, it becomes like, the Untouchables. Who would claim to be that? Who was not?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah, sure, if you're scamming somebody or whatever, you think of the South Park approach. But
time travel is a stretch. I mean, if Andy revealed that he's like if Andy revealed like he's a triplet or something and they all just take turns doing things, and that's why he's so damn energetic all the time, is the other two are sleeping.
You buy that over time travel?
Yes, I'd buy that over time travel.
Oh, so you'd go with the Prestige over
right.
Days of Future Past.
It's start making me question the way Catherine's brain works. You know, after a similar discussion last night about her issues with the military, ignoring the fact that there's a gigantic dinosaur destroying your city, but we have issues with the military. I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Wait, I wasn't on last night's episode.
It was the new Godzilla movie.
I gotta put my 2 cents in on this because I wasn't on it, but I've rewritten the movie. I can rewrite the movie and make it 1,000 times better than it was because I didn't give a shit about that kid. I didn't give a shit about that kid the entire time the kid was there. There's a third of that movie I didn't give a shit about. Like, kill him. Please kill him. Somebody kill this kid. How is he still alive, you lucky son of a bitch? What?
Calm down.
Second, here's how you
talk about X-Men. You calm down.
Here's how you fix it, Bobby. Maybe you had me on your little show. I could have told you this.
You weren't invited. You weren't invited to that show. So move on to that.
Right.
Show.
So come on. The board right now. Two.
Why don't we talk about what we liked about the show?
Hey, that's a good idea. Cole, get us started. What really kicked ass about the this X-Men movie deal thing?
Well, you know, we were talking about how, you know, it's such a conceit to have Wolverine front and center because, as I said earlier, you know, he's the sexy, marketable. The one you're going to get people in the door to see.
Yep.
Especially Catherine when she gets to see his ass.
Yep.
And
she asked them to rewind the film.
Yeah.
That's right.
Can you rewind and pause?
Yeah. When is this coming out on DVD and Blu-ray? Make it Blu-ray. I don't want a close-up look. But, you know, the thing about it is, what worked for me about using Wolverine in this context is, okay, whoever wrote this, you know, had to know, well, we've got to go with Wolverine. That's what the studio is going to want, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, they made good uses was the fact that, you know, Professor X has some vague memory of encountering Wolverine.
Which I thought was a brilliant
take. Yeah, even though they only got, like, maybe a brief profile look at his face in a bar years earlier.
Wolverine, of course,
remembers very much these guys showing up and the fact that he repeats his line to tell him to go fuck off, and all. That, you know, they had some fun with that.
That made
and,
me happy.
Yeah, it works in that context. It also gives you a lot stronger connection because of Wolverine's presence, heavy presence in the franchise before First Class, you get to do fun things like when he's encountering Beast. And he explains to him, you know, we're going to be great friends, and then punches him.
Well, it's the only time that the old, and I know Cole has bone claw baggage, but it's the only time the bone claw concept ever made sense to me is because, okay, he's got these bone claws now, but after Stryker gets a hold of him and screws with him and all, that's his bone claws.
So, you know, to me, that's a given but the thing that always bothered me about that is what made Wolverine in the comics so cool pre-origin was that as mutants go, okay, you know, apart from the insta-healing, he got kind of the short end of the stick. He can smell stuff from
far. He can smell far.
He's far smelling. He's, you know, he's got like animal senses, mm-hmm. basically. And he can heal. And this guy came along and said, well, you know, that healing part, I could use that to one-up you. And what was neat is he was a combination of mutant ability. He sort of combined two of the ways you become a superhero in Marvel Comics. That's either by, you know, having some sort of artificial augmentation, mm-hmm. or being a mutant.
Right.
If you want to have two of the easiest ways to get supered.
Right.
And we were talking the other day about how, you know, that's why Stan Lee brilliantly hit upon mutants. It's like, I don't have to write origin stories anymore.
Well, that's one of the things.
He still did. That's the sad part.
Well, that's one of the things I loved about most of the Marvel movies is you don't need 10 minutes of a tragic childhood I don't give a shit about.
You're so angry.
I am. You have no idea. And, you know, it's like, okay, here she is. Okay, she's blue. She's a shapeshifter, and she hates people. Okay, we're good. All right.
But the thing about it is, the thing that bothers me about Bone Claws is that from an editorial or a writing standpoint, at some point someone said, I can't live in a world where Wolverine doesn't have claws. And, you know, that's right up there with bringing Darth Maul back, with all these ridiculous things because somebody can't live with something ever being uncool.
Hey, it's just fun that they brought Darth Maul back. You just calm down.
Well, Bobby, you're being the voice of reason right now, so tell us what you loved about the movie.
How is that the voice of reason?
Because I told you not to be talking about Darth Maul. Yeah, that Warpath looks really good. What did I like about the movie? I like a lot of that aspect of it, but I like the fact that they didn't make it cluttered. They, you know, they give you just enough with the original cast members in the future aspect, and then periodically jump back so you don't forget they're there. But they still made sure that, you know, because the movie's essentially, despite everybody else being here, it's really, you know, the first class group of, you know, Mystique, Magneto, Professor X, and then bringing in Wolverine with that group. They're and Beast, and they are essentially the stars of the whole movie. And they kept it pretty much with them leading the charge, and, you know, gave us the sprinkling nuggets of the other cast members in the future and the quick appearances. You know, with the Quicksilver thing, I was really concerned they were going to thrust Quicksilver on and say, we love this new character, y'all have to have him the whole movie. And you get him for, what, 10, 15 minutes, and he's gone. And it works really well. But I think my favorite part of the whole thing is I love the take on Professor X, that he's, you know, he's basically kind of a dopehead now, and he's struggling to, he'd rather walk than have his powers, and he can't have both, and he's kind of given up on life, and it's kind of a side of Professor X you don't really get to see, especially in the movie aspect, though. It's always Patrick Stewart, you know, doing the old school Professor X, or you have First Class where you get to see the hipster version of him who's not quite that guy yet. In this one, we get the tormented version, and I think where in First Class, Michael Fassbender's Magneto was really the scene stealer with all the passion and everything.
Uh-huh.
I think McAvoy came in this time and he stole the show.
Yes, wow. He did.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
And I also like the idea of, you know, you've got your Patrick Stewart, Professor X, you know, there's almost the sense that, you know, I'm going to send you back and you're going to see me at a very, very embarrassing time in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't normally, you know, Hank knew, but that was about it. And this, you know, I don't like this.
I think the character the character was really, really interesting and a really interesting take on it, and it was kind of nice to see Professor X not like totally in control. And it's like, you know, it would get kind of annoying sometimes. It's like, okay, who knows the answer? Who can fix this problem? Nobody. Well, I guess I will.
Well, it was nice to see that they didn't, like, either kill him, capture him, or put him in some trance for once.
Yeah.
You know, with Patrick Stewart getting to run around and do stuff and not just say, oops, I'm stuck again.
Yeah.
You know? But I like the fact that they brought in all the other characters, but not all in relation to actually being on screen. You know, when they're going through the file and you find out what happened to the other members of the first class group.
Yes.
And you realize, okay, it's so impactful without ever really doing anything. So it gave more to that story, and it makes you realize, okay, this is why everything is so jacked up in the real world, you know, in the past, I mean, excuse me, mm-hmm. that it has nothing to do with the torment they're dealing with the Sentinels. It's the... just the bullshit that they're dealing with in general. So it's already like you've left this past where you're being decimated, and you're going to the future where you're being decimated, but you're going to the past where the same thing is happening in just a different way.
Well, one more thing about Professor X, though, and then I just kind of came to this revelation, is one thing that really annoyed me is when you at the point where you realized he can make everything stop, and then everybody who wants to can just walk out and leave.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Why don't we, like, use this during some of the battle royales we're having? like, okay, it's, you know...
Because that would be the boring fight ever.
Somebody's tied to something, and there's a bomb, and the clock is ticking, and time is of the essence, and it's like... What would be cool is if we could, oh, like, stop time and then go defuse the bomb, get the person, and just leave and be, you know, be home in time for dinner and then just turn time back on. And he doesn't use this power enough.
Oh, well, all I know is if you were in charge of making these films, they would be extremely boring because everybody would be just stopping all the fights. The military wouldn't help anybody. And Hugh Jackman would just be naked the whole time.
Would be boring to her.
I like a stone depressed Professor X. Is much more interesting.
He's got a lot more nudity in it.
How about Dinklage, huh?
What the hell did you just say?
Dinklage.
Oh, I said something about nudity. Just what about Dinklage?
I love Skype. No one has anything to say about Peter Dinklage, okay?
I think he's sorely underused. I love that guy.
I thought the character was phenomenal, and I think he was absolutely perfect for the role.
The one thing that I thought was weird, and this isn't it to do with the movie itself, but it kind of bothered me because, like, you know, I look at him, I just see Peter Dinklage, the actor who I love. I think he's a brilliant actor. I don't see that he's a little person. It doesn't affect me in any way. But I know when we were watching the screening, like, the first couple of times he came out, I could hear people throughout the audience giggling and laughing. You know, and
yeah,
it's like,
that's
it's like, really? It's like, come on, man, just watch the guy. Ignore what you think you see, because as sad as it is, you know, people look at it, and it's okay to laugh at them, even though it's really treating it the same way as if you were being a racist.
Yeah.
You know, but people don't look at it, no, little people are funny, and it's not. You know, I think he's such a brilliant actor, and he's time and time again proved that he's you know, well deserved being where he's at.
Well, I think he was fantastic, and I think he was absolutely perfect for that role.
Well, it also, you know, it gave a unique characterization to a character that, you know, really otherwise would have been, you know, just, you could have thrown anybody in that role and got away with it.
Right.
But the fact that they got somebody not only with his acting chops, but also literally brought a little something different to the table.
Right.
Without being outrageous. And, you know, what it suggests is, you know, it doesn't matter if he's a little person, because it's the fact that, you know, Bolivar Trask is like this mad genius.
And his mustache was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh.
Agreed.
He was rocking the 70s.
He really, yeah, he did have a period mustache that was taken via time travel.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually the only way they were able to get time travel to work. Just so they could go back in time and steal his mustache from him.
You know, that's the whole point. They're like, look, we want to do this, and have you seen the mustache we're going to use? Come on.
Yeah. I mean, literally, they just, like, stole it off of Burt Reynolds during a break on the set.
Nobody steals anything from Burt Reynolds.
It was a spare in the trailer.
Well, this
during
also
Smokey and the Bandit, too.
This movie was also the first time I think I ever really understood the Sentinels. I mean, other than the evil robot army, it's like, oh, okay, that's what they were supposed to be, or is this a different take on the Sentinels? Or did they used to be something else?
No, it's effectively, I mean, Bolivar Trask created them. They were designed to be, you know, government sanctioned mutant hunting robots. There were some various differences there. I don't know if in the comics they ever had the super adaptoid thing going on or not.
I found the idea that it was all a copying from Mystique really interesting too. I thought that her character is one of my absolute favorites.
My biggest issue with that character, and it still to me makes no sense. I don't know why they feel the need to make her naked. Because the character's like, I mean, she looks awesome, don't get me wrong, but the white outfit that she wears is still a practical outfit in the comics and could still work perfect on screen. There's no reason for her to, and I know there's her play of, like, I shouldn't have to wear this, I shouldn't have to cover myself.
Well, I disagree. The reason that she doesn't wear clothes is she can mimic on the spot. I mean, you mimic, you're going to be wearing a white shirt.
But the thing about it is, in the comics, you know, she had the white party dress on,
right,
with the skull belt. But the thing about it is, the white party dress with the skull belt would disappear and become, you know,
whatever
shield uniform or
pin particles.
Yeah. Okay, but I think because of the cinematic universe, by making her effectively naked, you will see times like in this movie where she's wearing a real coat. When
right.
she changes, there's one scene, you know, where she comes in looking like her, you know, like a Game of Thrones or a Hunger Games, Jennifer Lawrence, and she's wearing like the fur collar coat. And she changes into something else, but she has to take the fur collar coat off. So she actually, you know, picked that up or bought it or stole it or something. But, you know, she does occasionally, despite the fact that she can change her skin to look like anybody and apparently even shrink herself to look like Bolivar Trask. But they effectively, what that said is, you know, occasionally she does actually augment that ability with some genuine clothing.
Yeah,
I still don't like it.
But I think what it was is there is the idea is that, you know, the mimicking ability is just her. So you don't have to leave non-comic audiences wondering, well, how come her clothes changed too? And you don't have to come up with some, you know, ridiculous notion like, well, you know, she projects her power power out onto her clothing or some sad thing like that.
I still don't like it. And don't get me wrong, I like seeing a naked blue chick run around.
Well, you know, at that point it becomes very Rocky Horror Picture Show. They didn't make her for you!
Exactly.
Well, Andy, did you have a particular character that you really liked?
I'm going to steal Bobby's thunder, I think. But
probably going to steal Bobby's thunder on this one.
I really liked the way that they portrayed, and I've been waiting for a long time because of the fact that he was in the, well, depending on which version you want, there was a representation of him in the first Uncanny X-Men. And now he's, now his, correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby, his brother's back in X-Force? Is that the way they're doing it?
I don't know, actually. I lost track. You're talking about when they made the stealth X-Force team?
Yeah.
I don't remember, was that
Warpath? Thunderbird and Warpath. Yeah, Thunderbird and Warpath.
Yeah, okay.
But you're right. But Warpath, I think, was my favorite part of that because they took an actor, and Bobby and I were talking about this. Boo Boo Stewart from the, and I told Lacey we were in the movie, and she's like, "Who'd they get to play Warpath?" I'm like, "The dude from Twilight, an actor from Twilight." And they took Warpath, and they gave him a lot more depth than I thought they were going to. Like, he played a much larger role in that world than I think I was expecting him to. Like, when I saw him on screen, I'm like, "Holy shit, they got Warpath in this!" And then they were like, "Well, he points out." Because he has, you know, the tracking, yeah, he can find the sentinels on their way in, and he can let us know. That was really cool. And then they portrayed him with his two knives, like, jumping all over the place and attacking. Like, thank you. That was the one character I did not expect to show up. I think Blink was cool to be in there, the one that created the portals, and the way they used that power was super cool.
Yeah, so like, I was just all over the place. By Blink, because to me she's like one of those, you know, fifth, sixth generation characters, and, you know, like Jubilee or somebody that they throw in because, oh, well, this is what the kids know. But they, you know, they actually used her to good effect.
Right, so that was cool. But I really liked that. I liked that generation that they brought to the table because they kind of took this idea of there's a different storyline here, and that's the Age of Apocalypse storyline, which is another alternate reality Marvel X-Men storyline. And they folded a bunch of that kind of stuff in as well with Bishop and with Blink and those guys, and I thought that was really, I think it was really well done.
I'll give really that props for Bishop, because I've always hated the Bishop character. I just thought he was kind of stupid.
Right.
But they made, you know, that use of using the gun where he takes the power and then energizes, use the gun instead of shooting it out of his hands, I thought was a really cool twist. And I really was hoping, when I first started hearing Bishop, I was hoping they'd give him the weird Jerry girl curly hair, but, you know, they went with the dreadlocks, which, you know, the later Bishop, but he looks pretty badass.
Yeah, he does look badass, and Bishop is another one of those characters where I was like, you know, I really couldn't have cared less about Bishop. I don't know anything about the character. I didn't know what his powers were. I really have no use for a lot of those type of characters anyway. And again, they kind of just, you know, they didn't try to overuse him, but they didn't just disappear into the background either.
Well, they also manned up Iceman a lot, which I liked.
Yes,
they finally made him actually do Iceman things.
He's a first gen X-Men. Finally, he gets his due, you know? So that was cool.
Well, I like, too, that they, you know, that they, your first introduction to Iceman was really the one scene we've been waiting for since the moment they introduced Iceman into the X-Men movies with his ice sled.
Exactly.
You know, and once he did that, I'm like,
ice slide.
Yeah, and as soon as he did it, we're like, okay, Iceman is actually in this movie now.
The neat thing is with the future stuff, they actually gave all the characters a chance to shine without it ever getting overdone.
My only character issue that I was not happy with the way they handled was Sunspot. Because they so copped out on his power and just made him the Human Torch.
Right, right.
No reason they couldn't have made him
actually,
like...
in the comics, I was always, at least initially, I don't know if they addressed this down the line, but one of the things that bothered me about his power as it was portrayed in the comics was that he was like, when he powered up, was it like he was...
He'd like turn solid black and then
supposed to be like impervious to harm, but he wasn't invulnerable or something. I forget the exact wording, but it was like, I think he could become like super strong and such, but he wasn't invulnerable. And then occasionally they would have him do something like, punch his fist through a tree or something. And it's like, well, if you're not invulnerable, you're going to break every damn bone in your body.
Right.
Well, you might be able to lift that entire tree. But
I mean, I've always thought the character was really cool, but there was no reason they couldn't have made his power have that semblance, even if they had done more of like a kind of a lava cracking look to his body. So you had the black tones.
In fact, I wasn't entirely certain who that was meant to be.
Right, yeah. And if they had
given it was either, because it was sort of like a combination of Sunspot and Sunfire.
Right. Which I would have been happy if they brought in Sunfire, but again, the whole Human Torch aspect of it was awesome to look at.
He's the Human Torch.
I didn't say
that's
the
a
humid.
Really difficult state of matter to be the Human Torch.
I did not say the Humid, you dork.
But, again, you gotta love Skype.
I just was disappointed that they took such a generic tone to that character when there were so many different things they could have done to make him stand out. Because he has some cool moments, so if you'd made him visually... I mean, he looked awesome in the movie.
The reason they went with the fire, though, was so then you could have that kind of, the fire being assimilated by the...
Well, they could have still done the fire. He could have still shot the fire. That was fine. I'm just talking about the physical aspect of the character himself. When he powered up, he even... only thing was missing with him yelling flame on.
So I have can I say my two issues with the movie, and I really only have two.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we may as well go ahead and get it.
Let's transition over to that. Stuff.
First of all, when did Kitty Pryde ever exhibit the powers that she exhibited in this movie?
Yeah, I was like, why could we not write in an additional character who has such power?
Well, didn't she? Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. When did that actually somehow happen in the comic?
I don't think it ever did.
Well, no, in the comic, there was...
Because she was the one that was... She went back in time in the comic, correct?
They sent her back.
They sent her back, but there was another character like Rachel.
Are you sure? Because I was researching that myself, and the thing I read said that she had manifest an ability to be able to transport herself through time.
No, there was actually another person there, because Franklin Richards is in Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think it's Rachel Summers is the one who sends her back, if I'm not mistaken. It's been a long time.
Right.
But there were other characters involved.
Okay.
In fact, Franklin Richards gets offed pretty early into the story.
That's a pervert.
And, also in the story, unlike this version, most of the mutants' characters were all incarcerated.
Right.
They're really, when you get right down to it, the way they did it in the movie was better, because if the Sentinels have rounded up all the mutants, why even bother to feed and clothe them?
Right.
What is the point? Well,
yeah,
the point
that's
is
true.
There would be no story.
I have a quick question before Andrew continues on his other beef. The one character in the military camp sequence, that was supposed to be Toad?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is he looking so much different? That's one of the few that irritated me, since you are connecting to the same universe.
Well, the thing about it is...
so stupidly...
That comes down to a lot of things. If you go look at First Class, if you look at the previous franchise, well, Eric helped me build Cerebro. Eric didn't have Dick to do with Cerebro.
Right.
In First Class, Cerebro was completely developed by Hank McCoy, and the Cerebro we know, the big room at the mansion, apparently was just farted out of thin air. We're not sure how that happened,
here's where that argument kind of falls apart in this scenario. is we have the same director making both those movies. Where you have First Class, it's a different director coming in, despite, you know, not sticking to the idea. They kind of went their own way with it. You have Bryan Singer coming back, and Bryan Singer knows what toad he had in his other movie.
Maybe he didn't like the toad he had.
Right. Maybe and nobody else liked the toad.
Well,
I love Ray Park as much as you do, Bobby, but maybe...
Well, I think the toad's a stupid character anyway, but I thought that he looked just stupid in this movie.
Well, I think
I hated
the biggest issue I had wasn't with the way the toad looked in that sequence. It was the fact that he still had his goofy bug-eye goggles on working at Waffle House. When does that ever happen?
Well, it's
right.
He's got gigantic weird frog eyes the way they made him now.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, you know, how did he even get a job at the Waffle House?
Because it's the Waffle House.
Right. I mean,
people at the Waffle House, they're just a step up from people that work at a fair.
So my other beef is the total reasoning cop out as to why they could send Wolverine back and nobody else. Not because he has luscious abs and we're going to see him with his shirt off right away, which is the real reason they sent him back.
Yeah.
It was, and I think the line is something akin to, "Oh, my brain is the only one that can bounce back." Really? Because that's worked out for you so effing well in every other iteration of Wolverine.
No, it was about his healing factor can bounce his brain back.
No, but
that point in his life,
right?
He has finally learned how to bounce his brain back.
Well, yeah, I guess healing his brain can heal. He still has the emotional baggage car, but
looks like nobody's saying he's not still fucked in the head. He just has
he's got Swiss cheese memory still after all this time. My brain will bounce back, and then he has to go to the professor after it's all done. Tell me about everything that's happened for the last 90 years of my life.
Well, that's because of him going back. You see?
Oh, that's why. Okay,
it's
all making sense now.
Everything got changed, you see, so then his mind was jacked up. When he was having his issues in the past...
You sound like Cole justifying something.
Hold on, I am going to justify it because you were incorrect, sir. Because in the past, he was having these issues because his mind was merged with the younger version that hasn't figured everything out, along with the Wolverine that has figured everything out.
Red.
Come on, man.
My argument's invalid. Bobby is right. I am wrong. You win, Bobby.
Let's go back to talking about Toad.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Let's leave Toad alone.
Okay. Poor Toad.
I want to voice an issue that I had, not necessarily with this film, except in so much as it dropped the ball.
Okay.
Twice the X-Men franchise has done something really stupid. When, maybe it's because I just justify the living hell out of everything anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, one of the things, okay, if you go back to the first X-Men franchise and, you know, Senator Kelly gets mutant zapped.
He turns into water guy.
Yeah, he squozes himself out of his cell and then, you know, winds up on the beach naked and in a way that
nobody, Stanley serves him a hot dog.
Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm okay with Hugh Jackman's ass. I didn't want to see that guy's ass ever. the senator guy. But at any rate,
ignore the email I sent you then.
What the hell? But the thing about it is, okay, he is fatally turned into water and goes down the drains of X-Mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And then later they're bitching at Magneto that, oh, your mutant ray doesn't work. Senator Kelly dies. And he gives this curious line, "Are you sure you saw what you saw?" And it's like, well, you know, we're kind of there and you weren't.
Yeah.
But to me that seemed like such a setup for, okay, maybe it did work. Because at that point, because they never revisited that. I always thought it would have been so cool if Senator Kelly came back. Yes, it worked, but we defeated Magneto, and he's never going to get used again. And he's never going to have full confirmation that it works.
Hmm.
But I think that they missed the boat on bringing Kelly back as a self-hating mutant, human term.
Well, they were going to, but then they heard your disdain for his butt.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
But the thing about it was, it seemed like they missed a tremendous boat there.
Mm-hmm.
Because it could have had some cool implications. That, yeah, they defeat Magneto, but you know, he actually could have pulled it off. It wouldn't have just killed everybody. And they did it again with First Class with Darwin and, what's his name? Sebastian Shaw saying, "Oh, let's see you adapt to this." I would have loved to have found out that, you know, maybe imply that Bishop was Darwin. That the way he adapted to it was maybe like re-manifesting himself in the future.
Hmm. Well, I think that is a cool idea. You know how many people would have been pissed off?
Oh, yeah, I know, absolutely. But, I mean, they should have brought the Darwin character back in some way and suggested that, you know, maybe the way he adapted to that was reducing his body to its constituent atoms, and it took a while to put it all back together again. And they just keep missing these cool chances because we have to kill off characters. I mean, yeah, Darwin's not the... I mean, as on-screen characters go, Darwin's about a step or two above having Cypher in the mix.
But, hey!
I'm only talking cinematically here. But, and see, there, that was spoken like a true X-Men fan.
That would have made... You don't know how happy it would have made me for Cypher to come walking out of somewhere and go, "Finally translated it," and then died.
Yeah,
like,
really?
That would have been the best scene in the entire movie.
I just want to see one of the Sentinels adapt to that.
Right, it would have been the most boring fight ever.
Yeah, they would just be having a translation off.
So when are they going to have...
Now,
when are they gonna have,
ancient Cyrillic.
When are they going to have Warlock show up?
Hopefully never.
That would be cool. No, come on.
That would never be cool. That is the stupidest
ass
theory.
That's like Green and Strong Guy. Samuel L. Jackson didn't come by and just wave.
Strong Guy out of this.
The only thing that reason I'd want to see Strong Guy on things is to make sure they get his little blonde curl in the front of his head.
That's right. You got to have some Guido action going on. But the thing about it is, the other thing that they do, and this is true of both franchises, is going back to that line, "Are you sure you saw what you saw?" Okay, what does that even mean? And it seems like the writers of the X-Men films are compelled to have Magneto deliver one ridiculous, meaningless line in every franchise. And this one is no exception. In this case, it's being confronted by Wolverine's bone claws.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I had to vomit a little there.
This is the only reason it's an issue for you. His line didn't bother you.
No,
it's the bone claws that bother you.
Bone claws will always bother me. But Magneto's line about, what if they were made of metal? What the hell?
Yeah.
How is that even a thing to ask? Why would does he walk around and somebody like, "Oh, here's your coffee, sir. Oh, what if it was metal?" What are you?
He fantasizes about being made of metal all the time.
To be honest,
what if all
is.
The monkeys were metal? What if you weren't such an idiot?
It probably isn't really a thing because that's all he can think about. It's like,
yeah, I guess
like, you know, I'm
actually
useless. You got to remember, he spent time in the plastic jail cell, and he's now it's everything. He's like,
he was in solitary for a long time.
They brought this plastic plate with his dinner on it. It was a plastic fork and a plastic knife and a plastic cup and he's probably thinking, what if these were made of metal?
Yeah.
Did anybody else find Magneto pretty boring in this movie in comparison to First Class?
I think so, but I think it comes down to what you're saying.
I think that was on purpose. I think that's because
Professor
they let
X at the forefront because he was just sort of tacked on.
Although I will say that sequence when he goes to get his helmet and he's got his 70s hat or whatever on, and he still had it. Yeah, he still had
his Mad Men outfit.
Yeah,
he can walk it in, and I'm like, that is a cool bitch right there.
Yeah,
it's like Superfly.
Well,
I'm still aggravated to this day. And maybe somebody has some insight of read something or whatever of why they have yet to bring Nightcrawler back.
Because Alan Cummings refuses to it.
Is that what it is?
He will never put on the blue again.
Why? Did he just hate it?
He hated it. Apparently that was brutal.
Okay. That's what I was wanting to know.
I think it was largely something of he had no idea what he was getting himself into, and once he got himself into it, Jennifer Lawrence, they kind of gave threw her a bone and made it a little easier. Apparently, they shaved a couple hours off the.
Yeah, I saw that, and then supposedly she may be getting her own movie now.
Which would be so cool.
I think it's going to be a.
Well, we all know what you think, Andrew.
I think it's just going to be just a ridiculous movie.
Well, but that's me being one of the fanboys we hate.
The last few scenes in the movie, really, I got the flavor of, you know, take a look at these people as these characters, because this is the last time you'll see them. You know, Kelsey Grammer is Beast. Beast, it's like this checklist of people that you will not see done up like this again. So enjoy these last looks.
Well, they've already announced in the, you know, and of course we obviously know it's going to probably be all the main players, but they've announced that more of the originals from both casts are going to show up in Age of Apocalypse.
Really?
Yeah. They haven't said who, you know, so we all know it'll probably be, you know, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, the same people again. But they're going to be there.
I really like the fact that Logan got Jimmy Stewart in at the end there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's totally Angel on a Bridge situation. Like, Oh, look, it's Jean Grey. That's right. Like, you know, that was an awful Jimmy Smith. Shut up.
I wasn't going to say anything. If it makes you feel better.
Jean Grey.
Oh.
If it makes you feel better, Jimmy Stewart's an awful Jimmy Stewart. So.
Oh, how dare you.
I hate that guy.
Okay.
How can you hate Jimmy Stewart?
Ridiculous.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stuart Baltz joining us tonight.
Because he's a horrible actor, that's why.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not touching that. I'm leaving that alone.
This is a stutter that got lucky.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Mr. I that issues left. Over here.
I'm speechless.
It's the man who shot my childhood.
I don't like that either, if it helps.
Okay, Mr. Classic movie fan.
John Wayne was the Ben Affleck of his day.
Wow.
How many bone claws would you give X-Men, and are you going to recommend it to anybody and everybody you know?
Not bone claws. Give me Sentinels. Give me Midget Mad Scientist. Give me anything but bone claws.
It's going to be bone claws. How many claws would you bone?
Well, that's a different story.
Bobby, what do you think?
Well, hold on. I got sidetracked. I'm drawing Warpath. Sorry. I'm torn because I really love the movie way more than I expected. I thought I would enjoy it, but it's kind of become, I think, my favorite of all of them so far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go out on a limb and give it a 5, just because despite the issues, I think getting to see Warpath and getting to see Colossus and the Quicksilver stuff working so well, and the surprising direction they went with Professor X, I just thought
We need to step back a moment, because when Andy was talking about stealing Bobby's thunder, I thought you were going to start talking about Quicksilver. And we really need to take a quick moment to give Quicksilver his due, because he was much maligned when the first pictures came out.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
And I think that we really need to point out that he was a showstopper.
Yeah, he made the movie in a lot of ways.
I
did mention him earlier, but yeah, I loved him. He was fantastic.
And I find it amusing that the guy that's playing Evan Peters, that plays Quicksilver in this movie, and you have Aaron, whatever, from Godzilla playing Quicksilver in Avengers, and then they were best friends in Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, is him going around the room.
Yes, the manifestation of his power was just brilliantly portrayed. Superhero things ever
was just fun, and the fact of the matter is if I had a power like that, I would just enjoy the living daylights out of it.
Well, I like that they implied there was a brilliant thing there they did for a Age of Apocalypse, for them to jump back to the normal time period and everything and use Wolverine again and everything, that they made Wolverine know him in the future. You know, he's like, I know a guy, but, you know, he's probably, you know, younger, or whatever, however they worded it, so you can now update him, change him, make him look his current age.
Yeah, exactly. You can get a different actor or get the same actor and make him seem older, however you want to play it.
There's a cool nod, too, that he says when he sees the TV and he sees Magneto, when he's like, hey, my mom used to know a guy that could do that.
That's right. I'm so glad you brought that up. And I didn't get
because he's supposed to be Magneto's kid.
Yeah,
right.
Scarlet Witch, you're supposed to be Magneto's children. I mean, we're probably never going to see that. They certainly weren't raised by some sort of Minotaur Elsie.
Well, his mom did look like a hoe, so.
I also really liked. I really liked the music choice they used. I liked the whole 70s aspect.
Yes.
That ridiculous music just that shouldn't be on that kind of a sequence, and it worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
They did a really fantastic job with that.
That was one of the things that was exciting when we had the screening, because we had all kinds of issues with the screen freezing and things like that at the beginning. We actually got to watch that whole sequence twice.
Nice.
It's like, if you're going to mess it up, at least they give us an awesome sequence to rewatch.
Wow.
So, Ezra, I couldn't let this go on without having a really good discussion about Quicksilver, so we can get back to the...
And you know, the thing, too, you were talking about it, how he was... Everybody attacked it and thought he looked so stupid in the pictures. In the film, he doesn't look stupid.
Yeah. That's
not at all.
I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you can't judge this solely by one or two still pictures.
I mean, his Carl's Jr. commercial is ridiculously stupid, but...
Oh, all of them are. I mean, especially seeing...
The Colossus
go from hot chick to some dude.
The Colossus one's not stupid.
Put me off my food.
No, I mean, the costume works in the time period at which they put it in, and I think that was the thing that wasn't translated in the stills was what we're talking about is, and I'm glad they didn't make him like the comic books where he's just this arrogant asshole. I'm glad that they kind of made him just like, I'm a teenager.
And
I don't give a shit. Like I can do anything.
I was hoping they were going to give him his stupid little head hair curl.
You want to have the Night Owl licks?
Yeah, just to see if they can pull it off. Just, you know, like they did with Wolverine back in the day, and they were like, oh, wow, they actually pulled that hair off.
I like young Wolverine's hair, too. I like young Wolverine's hair.
Yes,
that was good.
Great. Yeah, because I also like the fact that, you know, when he wakes up in the past, in his past self body, he's probably wondering, did I actually ever wear my hair like this?
What the hell was I thinking?
Yeah. Well, Cole, do you want to go next? And instead of Bone Claws, let's have you give...
You will give it Bone Claws.
I will go ahead because it is such a very good film. And as I said about Godzilla, is it perfect? By no means is it perfect. Is it above and beyond anything I was expecting? Absolutely. There's so many things I just... can't get enough of about it, and I'm going to go ahead and snap 5 adamantiumized bone claws for this.
Okay.
And I'm going to go all in and give it a full complement of 6 bone, 2 fists worth.
Wow.
Bone claws.
Wow.
Cole just double fisted it.
I am going to double fist this one.
Well, you know, I'm going to let Andrew go last, and I am going to say that I really, really enjoyed this movie also a lot more than I thought it was going to. A couple of the X-Men movies I had just really started to fall out of love with the whole idea of seeing many more of them. And this totally hit the reset button on my attitude toward the characters and how excited I would get to see them again. And I am actually looking forward to the next X-Men movie.
You have to give us 2 ratings. We need to know how many bone claws you give the movie and how many bone claws you give Hugh Jackman.
All right, well, then
how many clawed bones?
How many,
that's right.
How many of his bones?
That would be 5 on both counts.
Nice. Five on both cheeks.
Five on both.
There were points like where, you know, Quicksilver saying his mom knew a guy who could do that. And I'm like, you know, jabbing Catherine and all, you know, those little fanboy moments where I know she's just going to get it, but I do. And when Hugh Jackman shows up with his bare ass, that, you know, she's like jabbing me.
I bet she is.
It's like, this is it. This is the, it's like, this is the
this is what I've been waiting for.
Yeah, this is
Yay,
it.
Yay, happiness.
This is my John Byrne moment.
Freeze frame. Take it home, Andy.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to give it an either or of either, for you two, I'm going to give it five bones. For Cole, I'm going to give it five metrosexual Eric Lesher ascots when he's in the train station.
Nice.
Yeah. I'll tell you, not enough movies have mutants with ascots. I'm going to put that on the table.
Like Mr. Drummond.
Everybody, Mr. Drummond. Good God, that's why Dinklage was in it. Yeah, there's a short joke for you. I thought it was fun. I thought it was really good. I thought Dinklage was amazing.
Yes.
He brought something to the table that had not been in any of the X-Men movies, and that was
talent.
A non-future.
Whoa, hey.
Well, no, she's got a point. A non-featured.
That was me, idiot.
Oh, I'm sorry. She has a point. It was one of the non-featured actors.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't an X-Man. He wasn't, but that had way more talent than almost anybody else in the picture. You know, barring your sirs.
Yeah.
You know, at the top of the food chain. The balance between the future and the past was done really well. And Lacey always really likes the period stuff when they bring in the Zapruder footage.
Yes.
and the old reel to reel tapes and things like that. When they were talking about how JFK was a mutant. Like, oh, you killed him? No, why would I? He's one of us. Like, that's
that, yeah.
And one of
those little nods make the movie for me. Like,
and you know what's
like
funny
anytime.
Is the JFK being a mutant thing, it almost forgave way back in the early days, before, you know, trade paperbacks and stuff. You'd occasionally have these standalone stories that were the original graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was an X-Men graphic novel that's very rarely mentioned as God Loves, Man Kills. And in a lot of ways, it was sort of like the reverse of the Magneto thing in the first X-Men franchise, in that you have this you know, mad evangelical preacher type who sees mutants as sort of like the work of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got like some kind of ray or something, I forget what it was, some sort of mechanism by which, you know, if you're a mutant, you apparently just get a really bad nosebleed, amongst other things. And you know, when he sets this thing off, there's like a senator or something in attendance who starts to get a bad nosebleed. And it was one of those things where, you know, they never followed up on that in the regular X-Men continuity. You never got to see anything more about this outed mutant senator. And in a way, that was like another one of those really, could have been something really cool that nobody ever followed up on.
Mm-hmm.
And in a sense, I don't know if there's any connection whatsoever, but it kind of gave me a sense of like, okay, well, we finally done something with that concept.
Right. I totally agree. And so I'm going to give it 5 out of 5. I thought it was the best. It was by far the best X-Men movie that I've ever seen. It was one of the better Marvel movies that I've ever seen. They're really coming strong in the paint this season with these movies, with Cap 2 and this and I think that Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be right up there with
when
them.
When we all get together for that, I think it's just going to be this this mass love fest.
It is.
Guardians of the Galaxy is already reminding me of like Ice Pirates. I'm so excited.
Right? It's going to be
so
cool.
It's Ice Pirates without the space herpes.
But you have to have the space herpes.
Well, that's my sole bit of knowledge about Ice Pirates.
I own it. We
right, so that's what I got.
Well, we'll have to get started watching those trailers and get ready for the Guardians of the Galaxy right now, let's say our goodbyes. Everybody has something here to promote, and so we are going to start. Let's start. Bobby never gets to go first. Bobby, you got going on in the outside world?
Well, in the outside world, I've been moving for 17 years.
Oh my gosh.
Well, as always, I'm forced to work on Jedi Cole's comic strip, You Are Here. But luckily, I enjoyed it enough that we have your first year here, You Are Here Volume 1, that is available now, not only at conventions and from Cole and myself, but you can also get it at Urban Legend Comics in Mesquite, and what is the other store, Cole?
Tribe Comics in Austin, Texas.
And possibly soon in Keith's Comics here in Dallas as well. And you can go to theexaminer.com to check out my reviews for TVs, movies, martial arts, and comics. And go to my website, laststopcomic.com, to look at 6 years' worth of webcomics, and eventually I'll update some more.
Awesome, awesome. Well, Cole, what you up to?
Well, actually, Andy and I are embroiled. We are well into...
Hip deep.
Yes, hip deep into a new story arc over at Hey Kids Comics right here on the Jedi Cole universe at JediCole.com, where we are re-exploring our very first story arc, in fact, our very first 5 issues.
Absolutely, we are.
And we have completed 2 out of 5 so far, so give those a listen and go back and listen to the first 5 issues and compare and contrast. And also on the JCU, in addition to What'd You Think and Hey Kids Comics, you can find myself and Eddie Medina on the Rantcore Pit and the archived stream, the archived editions of the Rantcore Pit live that we do over at Deep Ellum on Air every other Sunday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Where we ask the question, do you like the Star Wars? And we've got some more great shows coming up, some more new features on the JCU, so stay tuned to that. Also, Andy has a little side project, I believe.
I do. It's called Blasters and Buns. It comes out when it comes out. It's just the most irreverent look you can possibly have at Star Wars. It's a whole lot of fun. We're going to have to redo our issue on Empire Strikes Back. It is unfortunately now a lost
episode.
Yeah, we have our first lost episode, which was very hard for Brittany to understand. Yeah, she's like, what do you mean it's a lost episode? Well, it's a lost episode. These things happen. I don't think she was entirely too happy about it, but we'll have to re-record it. It's a lot of fun.
And also, if you're like me and just recently got back from enjoying a convention and you want to go to more conventions, if they're in Texas, visit Convention Awareness
Project. Which 90% of them are.
Yeah, or at least the ones we care about. and the only ones I'm going to bother listing on my site, go to Convention Awareness Project Texas it's at conventionawarenesstx.blogspot.com, where you can get full listings all year long of every convention in the state of Texas. If I'm aware of it, it's there. Click on the name of a convention, and it will take you to their website.
Yeah, yo.
I drew a picture of Warpath.
You drew a picture of Warpath.
And, of course, Catherine, Andrew, and myself, along with Rick Gutierrez, can be found over United States of Geekdom at unitedstatesofgeekdom.com, where we will very soon be embarking on Super Month, an entire
Super
month of shows
month.
About Superman.
The S-Man. Well, thank you, fellas, and thank you so much for the fun time to have a nice mashup with the Hey Kids Comics. And thank you again, everybody who's joined us for what is always a super fun show. Love to record it. We would love your feedback. Take care and all the best from What'd You Think?